The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for the Free Library of Philadelphia at home. My name is Jason Freeman. I'm a producer and editor here in the Free Library's author events office, South Philly branch right now, I guess. So as a quick intro, comedian, writer, and actor Colin Quinn, his decades-long career includes stints as anchor of Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update, his own titular talk show, numerous stand-up specials, and appearances in multitudinous sitcoms, movies, and talk shows. He is referred to by the likes of Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, and Tina Fey as the essential New York comics comic. And his acclaimed one-man Broadway shows addressing everything from the fall of world empires to his family include My Two Cents, The Coloring Book, and Red State, Blue State. Tonight, he is here with Overstated, a coast-to-coast roast of the 50 states, in which he infuses insight with comedy to lambaste the sacred cows and quirks of our 50 very dissimilar states. Colin, welcome. It's great to have you.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks, everybody. So I'll start out with reading a little bit of Philly stuff, and then, you know, you can start peppering me with angry responses from there. So this is in the Pennsylvania section of the book. And I say, Philly has always been the East and Pittsburgh is the Midwest. Pittsburgh is where the fans are obsessed with the Steelers, and Philly is where the fans are obsessed with themselves. Philly fans are famous for throwing snowballs at nuns and batteries at cancer survivors. They even have their own prison originally called Veterans Stadium, which is an idea I would like to spread to comedy clubs. Philly and Pittsburgh are two cities that symbolize early American greatness. The foundation of our government started in the East Coast, when all these brilliant guys threw out ideas for the country and how it should operate while dropping names like Cicero and John Locke and Demosthenes, the way Philly people today drop DeSean Jackson and Carson Wentz. Then you've got Pittsburgh, which represents big business and blue collar steel workers, all those big Polish immigrants working the coal miners. And Pittsburgh is still like that, even though the steel mills have left. If you go to the surrounding areas, there's a few guys that look like they drink at the Knights of Columbus and attended the wedding in the Deer Hunter. And they look at you like you're not a man unless you've done a man's work, unless you've shoveled coal into a blast furnace and then gone to a First Communion in a Jack Lambert jersey. So that's basically Philly and Pittsburgh, which, let's face it, what else is Pennsylvania?
Cool. Thank you very much. I think a lot of people probably open the book and flip to their own state first, but I will admit I did that. I'm from West Virginia, so I've heard it all. So whatever. Yeah. But I actually, the second one I turned to was New York, because as you know, you are a born and bred New Yorker. I was interested to, you know, read what you would have to say about that as, you know, a whole state. Can you talk a little bit about that? How I guess you, you know, and people from New York City see the state of New York?
Well, when I was growing up, everybody went to college in upstate New York, and they all the upstate people, like the city people, the people from the boroughs in Manhattan and Brooklyn and Queens, we were the go-between the Long Island people and the upstate people. Because the Long Island people are, you know, the upstate people just couldn't take how annoying they were, because they're kind of a combination of us and them. And upstate is, they're like a rural community anywhere. They're quiet, they're simple, you know what I mean? Like they didn't dress up. Like the Long Island kids be disco clothes as the old days. and the upstate kids would be wearing like jeans, and people in New York were kind of in the middle. So but New York City has always been like this cocky place, and upstate would rather be part of another state. I mean, they're upstate, they just, you know what I mean? They're like, they don't want to be part of us, you know?
Yeah, I think that's like a Pennsylvania thing too. You say it too. It's like, it's Pittsburgh and Philly, you know, and everything in between is in between.
And it's sort of our country's biggest problem right now is red state, blue state is in the states. You know what I mean? So you got Philly, which is probably pretty liberal. Then you got Pittsburgh, which is probably pretty conservative. And then the suburbs sort of go in between, you know? So it's kind of a, you know what I mean? Maybe this country, if we do divide, it should be cities, suburbs, and rural areas. That's what we'll separate instead of making it state by state.
Right. I'm gonna jump pretty far to the other side of the country. One of the states I really enjoyed you talking about was Oregon and the Pacific Northwest in general. And I was listening to an interview you did, and it's in the book too. You were talking about computer nerds, and we were talking about it a little bit, you know, even before this. Can you talk about that, especially as relates to our current situation in America and what's going on in Oregon and, you know, with all of us?
Well, Oregon, they really, I mean, talk about dropping the ball. They're opening a sneaker store. And meanwhile, on either side of them is the biggest revolution of technology in the history of the world. Northern California and Seattle, and they're worried about sneakers. So they may have dropped the ball in many ways. But my thing about the nerds dropping the ball is that the reason COVID has not been cured yet is because nerds, until computers, nerds only had one area that they were allowed to go into, which was medical. Everybody in the medical field was the top nerds in the country. So they'd just be focused. And if you had those people right now, they would have cured COVID in 3 weeks. But because they, instead of going into medical, they all went into computers, because that's like rock and roll. You can be in movies. I mean, you know, they're the rock and roll stars of California. They replace Hollywood. So naturally you want to go into that. So now God knows who the medical people are. They're like the third tier of the nerds. They're not even probably real nerds. So COVID's never going to get cured.
I love it. Well, as a nerd who wasn't even good at computers, I think I missed the boat on everything. What's that?
I said a lot of hipsters were nerds that weren't technologically proficient.
So maybe you got to focus on clothing. One thing I think is really awesome about the book is this balance that you strike. You're definitely poking fun at every state and America in general, which is, you know, an important thing to do. But the balance is that there seems to be real affection there too. And I was wondering if you could talk about that balance. Is that hard to strike? I mean, have you had anybody, you know, come up? Well, nobody comes up to anybody anymore, but has anybody, you know, over a Zoom meeting or anything, has anybody been like, you got it wrong, or like, how dare you say that, or anything like that?
Well, so far I haven't. I haven't gotten a lot of negative responses, but that could also mean people aren't reading my book. So I don't know if it's not necessarily a good thing. It could be that they like it. It could be they haven't read it, which is a bad thing.
Right.
So it's hard for me to say yet on social media. I mean, you know, and I've gotten a few good ones, but not enough where I'm like, I'd rather be inundated with you got it wrong, because that means more people would be buying it.
Right. Well, you know, I tell you, like I said, I'm from one of the most maligned places in the country. And like, I thought it was actually pretty loving. And I was like, oh, that it was nice. Like, so.
Yeah, I mean, we make jokes about the incest, of course, but the other side of it, but the other side of it is when you think about those caves and all those mines, the subconscious that we all, you know what I mean, had that one cousin we were attracted to. Plus the fact that West Virginia, the fact that they had the balls to secede from Virginia and fight George Washington when entire people shook in fear from him. That says something about their personality. It's pretty funny.
I know. I love it. And I was also listening to the interview you did on the radio with Preston and Steven. And, you know, you were talking about going to different places and all these beautiful old theaters and things like that. And I was thinking about, you said you've been to every state. Is it still every state but three? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I was thinking about
Dakota.
Oh, sorry. Which
three? Oh, no, the Dakotas and Wyoming.
Okay. I was thinking about like the life of a comedian on the road. And I mean, and you know, it's a tough gig. And I know there's a lot of travel. How much are you seeing of these places? What are you seeing of these places? You know, say you end up in, I don't know, pick a state at random. What do you get to see of these places when you're there?
It all depends on the middle act and the club owner. Because if you have a friendly middle act, he'll be like, hey, I'll take you around. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and if you have, or a friendly club owner is like, hey, I'll show you. We'll go we'll go hunting. We'll go, you know, fly fishing or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you get an owner that's like, this idiot, you know what I mean? He's just like, then you don't do that. You know what I mean? Or a middle act. I had a middle act in El Paso who, not only did he take me across the border, he introduced me to his friend, this beautiful girl who took me across and told me stories. The three of us went out and she told these exotic stories about Juarez. You know, it was like reading a novel. So when you have some people like that, it's good.
Right.
And then when you just have people that aren't interested, then you see the hotel, you see the mall, maybe, you know. It depends on who's your tour guide, you know?
Right.
And there's some comedians. Yeah.
See everywhere.
Yeah. They'll go out. They'll get up early in the morning and go out and go on like a tourist and go to things. I'm not one, but I admire them for doing that.
There's kind of something in the book, how many of our regional clashes are now about not having any landmass left to explore, and how once we got to California and the Pacific Northwest, we'd more or less run out of room and actually, you know, have to figure out a way to live with each other. I guess a manifest destiny sort of thing when that ends, where we end up. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, because we had this, it's not that we even ran out of room when you think about all the empty states, but the fact that we're like, the idea, the psychological idea of like, oh, let's just keep going, like pushing our problems down the road, just open up a new place. People go there, they're talking about it, even if they're not going, you know, it was like a place for kind of, in some ways, each state, the troublesome people had to go west. The new state moved them over. So that once that idea ended with California, then, and the idea of manifest destiny ended, everyone's just looking like, now what, you know? We should have gone north into Canada. We, you know what I mean? We would have taken over. We should have worked our way back. Remember, Washington State and British Columbia, that was the, whatever, 38th parallel, so
440
we could have just, yeah, we could, exactly. We could have just justified, gone up there and took the whole thing. And by now, we'd probably be coming to the end.
Right. Well, you know, Canada. Who knows what'll happen? Maybe we'll invade here at some point. I was thinking about this too. And you know, I've read other things about your relationship with New York. Is there anywhere else that you could possibly live at this point?
Well, I always say Philly is like, the thing I like about Philly is it's like New York in the 70s. It's basically, you know, a city, and now New York is like New York in the 70s. Philly's the only place I've seen hipsters fight people. Everybody fights in Philly because you kind of have to survive. You have to throw a punch. It's just the way it is. And so, I mean, I like cities, but if I had to live outside of New York, I mean, I can't imagine. I lived in LA for 2 years. That was all right. But it would be, I'd like to live like, where there's a lot of snow, like Colorado's nice, but I'm sure I get bored. See, most New York people don't even live in New York. So like I'd have to move to Florida where all the people from, if you go to South Florida, everybody has a New York accent. New York City, nobody has a New York accent.
Right. I was thinking about New York, and you had said a few things about it in your radio interview. How has the pandemic fundamentally changed New York as you see it now? And I think you're pretty qualified to talk about this. Do you see there being a lasting effect? I mean, people have talked about these mass exoduses from like San Francisco and tech places. What do you see happening to New York?
Yeah, San Francisco, I can imagine, because last time I was in San Francisco, the homeless thing was like almost a mile. It was over a mile long. And I knew those tech people, this was their move. And they're tech. If anybody can work from home, they can. New York, same thing's happening. There's a lot of empty buildings. Empty, or like you'll look out at buildings at night and there used to be all lights on them. And now there's lights on like seven lights in like a high rise or an office building. And it's just a little bit strange. You know, there used to be like 50 lights or 70 lights. And now there's like seven. So, I mean, you know, the thing about New York is we set it up so that it can't fail because the suburbs kind of suck too. So people just naturally are like, oh, I don't know. It's not that great here either. Let's go back. So I feel like people just kind of wind their way back because it's not that great outside either.
Right.
Whereas in the 50s and 60s, suburbs was a dream.
Right. And now, that's Philly too. There's all this flight, you know, back into the city. And so here we are. I can't say anything. Here I am. I guess that leads me to questions about this larger concept of America. I've watched your one-man shows and this kind of thing in this red state, blue state. This is a big question, I know, and big questions are tough, but election aside, which is a whole other kettle of fish, I'm sure we could, but where do you see this country going as far as this red, blue thing? Are we going to be more purple? You've been everywhere. Like, where do you see us going?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're probably going to end up somewhere in between because, you know, I feel like most people don't agree with the loudest voices are social media people mostly. That's who sets the tone. That's who people go, oh, social media is not real. It affects people that are real. Mm-hmm. There's a fear. Most people are afraid of being, of trending. You know what I mean? That's probably the number one fear. It used to be, you know, dying of a, you know, tuberculosis, then it was being killed in a war, and now, then killed by a wild animal, and now it's trending on Twitter. And so I feel like those are extreme people. Those are dumb people, because to me, extremists are dumb. That's how I feel. I feel like anybody that sees things with no gray area, no contradictory thing, they're not smart people. That's how I feel.
Right.
I sounded like Trump. They're not smart people. But I mean, so I'm just saying that unless people look at nuance, so I feel like most of the country feels like, well, I believe this and this, this and this, like almost like a mixture of things. So that hopefully will rise to the top because wars start when dumbasses and extremists clash. So I hope and then once you're in there, even if you're a moderate person, once somebody in your family gets hurt, you're going to jump in too. And that's, you know, it becomes like, wildfire, you know? Right.
And kind of piggybacking on that, you had a tweet I liked the other day that said, the closer we get to the election, the more divided we seem to become politically. I don't think this is what the founding fathers had in mind, gang. And speaking of people
But I was being ironic because, of course, they did have this in mind.
Exactly. But having no concept of, you know, electronics or, you know, Twitter or anything like that, It's difficult. And piggybacking on top of that, even you have little sections in the book about things that aren't specifically about the states. And you had one about the Electoral College. If you have that handy.
Yes, I think that's in the Philadelphia section.
I believe it is.
Conveniently enough. Let's see.
Would you mind giving us a quick reading?
Oh, yes, here it is. Here's the problem. Here's how you know I talk about Rutherford B. Hayes, Samuel Tilden. People don't want to hear that, but here's why you know the Electoral College was not a great idea, because nobody copied us. Not nobody, but the only other places that have Electoral Colleges is India, Nepal, Pakistan, and Vatican City. India, the president doesn't count. It's a figurehead role. Pakistan is shady. Nepal is a country created for Instagram. And Vatican City, since its president is the Pope, that turns the cardinals into the Senate. And other than the College of Cardinals and the Swiss Guard, they have no citizens. Have you ever heard of a $1 million listing in Vatican City? No, because there's no real estate agent. You can't live there. So the argument for an Electoral College is if you get rid of it. Here's the argument for the Electoral College. If you got rid of it, when they originally put it in, they were afraid that if you got rid of it, people would elect a populist WrestleMania type personality. But actually the opposite seems to have happened. The people didn't do it, but the Electoral College did. Anyway, that's one of my thoughts on the Electoral College. The Electoral College was supposed to, you know, keep this kind of stuff from happening, when meanwhile it seems like it did happen.
Again, I think something just the founding fathers could have envisioned, like that people in the country would have more power over the vote. And I guess it leads me to, I think you have a definite voice in talking about this. Where do we go? I mean, you know, a lot of people on Twitter that I know, that we all know, talking about all of America as if it's a monolith and, you know, you've never gone out of your county or something like that. But like, how do we fix this? Like, how do we have a greater understanding of the fact that we aren't a monolithic society? That's a big question too, I know.
I know. Well, I mean, it's really just a viewpoint. Unless we decide that we worship, unless we decide to really have reverence for compromise, it's never going to get fixed. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of people that are just didactic and just, they are 100% ideologued and they're fanatic, and they want things to go the way they believe an ideal society goes. And when you have that, you're never going to have anything but war, in my opinion. Because the only way people the only time people change their opinion is after a war. When they're surrounded by rubble, they go, okay, now we're going to change our opinion because these guys changed it for us. So, you know, that's what we're moving towards. How do we stop it? I mean, I don't see any great minds. My idea was always to put like a constitutional convention. Philly had the right idea. A constitutional convention where they air out all the ideas. So at that convention, what do they say? You should have these every few years. And we've never had one since. Despite, especially lately, we've needed like five in the past 25 years.
Right.
Just to wait in the nation's country. And we have to get, my idea would be, you do it in Philly, fine, I'll let Philly have it. A constitutional, you get 70 of the greatest minds in the country. We'll argue over that for 10 years, I know, but who the greatest minds are. But then, because you can't have everyone weighing in on social media, commenting, because you get paralyzed, you can't do anything. We do it like Masked Singer. Everybody's in a mask, so you don't know who they are till after the Constitutional Convention.
I love it. You should be on that show, by the way. if they give you the call. Dare we talk about the election for just a second? Thoughts? What do you think's going to happen?
I mean,
rolling down Pennsylvania Avenue or.
I mean, if right now they just counted. I thought I saw 50 million people have already voted.
Yeah.
50 million.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine it would be Biden winning, but you never know. I mean, one thing about Trump, he's got everybody spooked. My brother used to say, he's lived the narcissist dream. For a narcissist, he's the greatest narcissist in history. He lived their dream. Everybody in the world is talking about him all the time. All the time. And, you know, who knows? I mean, he's so, I always say that the toughest time is if he loses, then what he's going to do to the White House in the next 2 months, he's going to be, you know, going to the bathroom in the drawers and closing them. He's going to do all kinds of stuff just to wreck the, you know what I mean? Burning the rug, ripping up the mattresses. So when you show up there, he's going to wreck the place.
Crashing the Lincoln.
But I mean, the worst is there'll definitely be riots if he wins. And if he loses, there probably won't be riots. But either way, this country's still divided. Like Trump or no Trump, this country's divided, you know? And it's kind of sad because nobody trusts anybody. Nobody trusts the media. And it started before Trump. He just exacerbated it. But I mean, nobody gets, it's just such a, who thought we would come to this? But it's really, you know, it just shows how bad free speech is. I talk about that in the Pennsylvania chapter. Free speech, what does it do? You know what I mean? Everybody's just talking all day. No knowledge, no qualifications, but they're all, everybody's a journalist. Everybody's a photographer. Everybody's a model. And it's just everybody yapping away, you know?
Yeah, that was one of my favorite parts where you talk about the Bill of Rights, when it's like Third Amendment, no, soldiers are sleeping on the stoop. I love that.
Yeah. It's like, thank you for your service, go on the stoop.
Us being the library you see behind me here at home. Talking about books for a second, you have a really lovely de Tocqueville quote at the beginning of the book. I'm sort of, you know, seeing this as, you know, an antecedent of that. I was wondering, was there anything specific you were reading, watching, Ken Burns-y kind of stuff? Anything you were specifically tuned into when you were writing this?
I was reading de Tocqueville to get myself inspired. Every page. See, in those days, people didn't have to compete with TV or anything else. So he could write every detail. It was like traveling. It was slower. Reading his book is slower and more arduous than traveling his route. And he was only in the country, I forget, but I thought he was there for like 10 years, like 6 months or something. It was insane how little time he spent. But he was sharp. And right. It's so interesting, his observations on America then and how our personalities have not really changed in a lot of ways, you know?
Yeah.
The guy was really a genius because he said stuff about us that still stands, you know?
To be fair, the country was teeny tiny back then, so 6 months, you know?
I know, but Jesus.
I'm kidding. Would you mind, it's one of my favorite sections in the book. Could you read the Bill of Rights section real quick?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it's in Philly too. I don't even have to go that far. Philly gets a lot of play. I mean, Pennsylvania.
We get all the best stuff.
I'm obsessed with Philadelphia. I don't know why. The Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. Electoral College. Oh, here it is. I think this is it. Okay. I've never been a fan of the Bill of Rights or the first two amendments. You've got free speech, free assembly, free press. Those three have been free a long time. And what have they accomplished? Nothing but big mouths and traffic jams. The Second Amendment has accomplished a bunch of kids jumping under their desks when a car backfires. Third Amendment, you won't let a soldier be quartered in your house. Thank you for your service, but sleep outside on the stoop. Fourth Amendment, probable cause. So some kid has the shape of a shotgun under his t-shirt, you're supposed to think it's just a lumpy sweater. Fifth Amendment, witness against yourself. You don't have to be a witness against yourself. What if nobody else was there? Sixth Amendment, right to confront witnesses. Sure, nothing like having a face-to-face with the murderer you're trying to put away for the rest of his life. Seventh, suing people. That worked out well. We didn't abuse that one. 8, excessive bail. Bail is only good for the accused, but bad for all your loved ones, because if they don't bail you out, you can hold it over their heads for the rest of their lives. 9, there's a lot of stuff we didn't get as far as fundamental rights. Oh, so the founding fathers were the friends that help you move out of your old place, but leave while your furniture is still on the street in front of the new one. 10th Amendment, state versus federal when it comes to power. 3 branches system, bombs. Legislative, judicial, executive. And that's basically it.
I love it. Thank you. I have 2 more questions and then we're going to kick it to our audience questions. 1, this is maybe a tough question, but what state most lives up to its reputation?
Of the states I've been to, I would say Florida. Florida is just as crazy as you can. And Louisiana. When you go to Louisiana, the air just feels like you just want to do like stuff that's illicit, you know? It's just got the air, there's something in the air there. And Florida, definitely.
Okay. And lastly, I know people ask you about a lot of your projects and this kind of stuff, but, and this maybe dates me, I'm 42, but I was a big fan of Remote Control and I was looking up clips of it in anticipation of this and everything. And it's such a document of that era. Yeah, I mean, there's music videos at all and that kind of thing. Reboot or what was the atmosphere on that show like? Because that era seems like a total free for all as far as that show goes.
It really was just as, it's the only thing I've ever done that was just as much fun as it looked like.
Really?
We had so much fun. Everybody was just, everywhere we went when we travel was, they were having their biggest party of the year there. So you're going places where people are going to have their biggest party of the year. So it's always fun.
Must have been awful. I'm so sorry.
Great.
Okay. So we are going to kick off a Q&A here. And without curating these at all, let's see. First up. Okay. I feel like some of the criticisms, of course, like New Yorkers, we're obsessed with ourselves. I feel like some of the criticisms of Philly that Colin mentions are things that Philly people are proud of. Do you think that's pretty common? Do you think that people are proud of their regional foibles? And that is from Carrie.
That's a good question. And yeah, I think it's definitely true about New York. New York is so proud that people think we're rude or we're like, you know, these fast-paced people. New York is definitely the most arrogant states, in my opinion. New York, Texas, they're places like the New York City, I should say, New York City, all of Texas and Chicago, like they feel great about themselves. And LA used to feel that way, you know?
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I definitely think Philly and New York, Boston, they like the idea that people, that we're like real East Coast, you know, loud, aggressive people. I think all 3 of those cities love that reputation.
And this is something I'm interested in. This is from Anne. For thousands of Pennsylvanians, there is also Penn State, AKA Happy Valley. Can you trash that quickly as well? And I'll just add to that. You know, I come from a small town, small place. What do you have to say about Central Pennsylvania? You didn't, not talking about Pittsburgh or Philly, anything to talk about as far as?
You're talking about like Penn State area?
Yeah, Penn State or, you know, say Scranton or say Carlisle or say, I mean, you go to these places too?
But you're not talking about like the cradle of quarterbacks, Pennsylvania.
Oh, we can talk, let's talk about Penn State specifically then, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm saying that whole area of all those quarterback, you know, where it's like, I've actually driven going to Scranton one time, and on the radio, I'm trying to get rid of this back when you didn't have Sirius. On the radio, I'm trying to get reception. The only thing that comes in clear as a bell was a high school football game on the radio. And I was like, boy, now I know I'm in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I mean, just the fact that a high school football is the only thing I could get on the radio. I mean, that says it all. You know what I mean? It's interesting to, but I guess that's not really the steel mill, Pennsylvania. Is that what you mean?
I think so. Yeah. Well, people talk about it. People say it disparagingly, and I think it's an insult to Kentucky, but they call it Pennsyltucky. But whatever, you know, your experiences in these, yeah, that's your first time. Okay. But your experiences in that area.
Well, Pennsyltucky, I haven't heard of
that. That's really.
No, yeah, and West Virginia's right in the middle. Guys are right there too, right?
Like, well, neither North Pennsyltucky, South, West Virginia, or East Coast or West, yeah, or Midwest, yeah.
So it's all those miners and stuff, yeah. It's all those mining towns and stuff. I know, it is pretty amazing, like when you think about the fact that, you know, this guy, just like six people had money and everybody else was just some Eastern European that they threw him in the coal mines and they're like, hey, just glad to be here. And they set up all those little crazy little towns, you know? I mean, yeah. I did comedy right before the break in Bethlehem, which is now, you're looking at these steel mills and they're a tourist spot. And if that doesn't, it's almost sadder that we've gone literally from working to observing. Like that used to be all these people working. And now you go and look and go, that looks cool. They must have worked hard in those days. You know, right across the street, what else did they build? A casino, you know, a casino. It's all leisure activities. It's all gambling and looking. And it used to be people walking down that hill to their job. It's amazing, right? The symbolism of that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's so many places I've been in this country too. It's now kitsch or it's quaint. It's like, oh, people used to do that.
Yeah. That's going to be New York for the next 20 years. People are going to go down to the subway and just look and go, what if these used to be packed with people? And you go, oh, that's interesting. What would they do? Yeah, they'd pack into those trains. Oh, that's fun. That'll be the New York's going to be like Disneyland.
Well, do you kind of feel like that is a true thing in some sense? I read somebody, it was a, you know, a lot of bands moved down this way or Baltimore, you know, from Brooklyn, that kind of the hipster shit you're talking about. And this one band, the quote was great, that Manhattan is a playground for the very wealthy. Do you feel like there will be this sort of Disneyland version? Not that Times Square isn't that, but like this Disneyland version of New York, people like imitating the accents, you know, this here, experience it as it used to be. Do you feel like that sometimes?
I feel like it is like that, yeah. I mean, I definitely feel the reason those bands are moving to these places is because that's where people appreciate their music. You know what I mean? New York is, I always try to tell people, New York City was never a music town. I'm not saying they didn't have recording studios, and I'm saying bands had to break there, but the radio in New York, I grew up on the radio in New York, was terrible my whole life. And I'd go out to Long Island or upstate or some other state, and I'd be like, wow, they play great music all the time on the radio here. New York, it's been terrible radio since I was a little kid. And that's the dirty secret nobody wants to talk about.
See, that's what I love. You're willing to talk smack on where you're from, which I think if more people did that, we'd have a more enlightened, you know, vision of other places and other people.
I know. Every place is so territorial. And if you really want fighting words, make fun of their college football team, then you're dead anywhere.
Oh, yeah. Well, here is an interesting one. How about a sequel? Rage Against the Poutine, a coast-to-coast roast of Canada? Or to make it an easier question, do you have a follow-up book?
I like the fact that they gave me the title. Rage Against the Poutine is pretty good.
It is pretty good. We'll give a... Oh, the question got a rate.
For your second.
So.
That's great. But I talk about Canada in the fact that I'm fascinated. They set up their society the way we should have. They broke it down by personality. That's why they function so well. So you had the West Coast was the hipsters in British Columbia. Then the next one was the cowboys. The next one was the rednecks. The next one was the tech people. Then they had the French Canadians. Then Newfoundland and Nova Scotia, they had the Irish. They broke it up so that everybody was separated. That's the way we should have done it. They did it by personality up there. Canada always does everything correct. It's a little infuriating.
Isn't it? This question is pointed. I will expand on it a little bit. Can Colin Quinn explain the New York Times? I guess I'll ask, are you a New York Times person, New York Post person?
No, I mean, they're referring, when I was on SNL, I used to do Colin Quinn Explains the New York Times.
Oh, right.
That was a little segment I used to do.
All right, let's move on. This is pretty good. What state gets a bad rap that's not deserved?
Everybody deserves it. Every state deserves a bad rap. Every state, the only difference is some states, everybody attacks Florida. But meanwhile, they're like our secret where everybody really, they know where they're supposed to be there for, so you can go down and cause trouble. Like, you know, they're the after hours club of America, I think, in many ways. So we're supposed to be there and you're supposed to wreck the place and leave. You know, we want them to be this nice place where they're not crazy. If we go down there, people drink, they do drugs, they have sex, then they leave, and Florida's supposed to go back to being normal. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So they get a bad rap, but they're just doing the, they're doing what we want out of them, you know?
Here's what I liked in the book. Why were you so harsh on Albany? I feel like this has to be an Albany person. It's one of the first 13 colonies, and admit it, it's clean. It looks beautiful with the Gothic Renaissance and all sorts of old architectures. Yeah, why? It's a roast, but, you know, why so harsh?
It's the most beautiful, clean, Gothic, beautiful place. Why was I so harsh on it? Because I've been there probably 15 times in my life, and I've never seen a living human being. I've been there on Saturdays at night. I've been there on Tuesday afternoon. I've never seen a human being in the entire city. It's deserted. There's no people there. That's why it's so beautiful. No one's ever touched it. It's since they first built it. Where are the people? They're not moving.
Well, that's one thing you talk in the book that I've definitely noticed too. These towns that tend to roll up the sidewalks at 5 p.m. Philly is a city that is not like that, but so many, I think the South is like that in a lot of ways. I think you were talking about, was it Houston, Atlanta, something like that? Like, it's crazy.
Raleigh is like that. Houston is like that. Not just the South. Like Albany is the ultimate example. And there's only a few cities where people go out at night. And nobody ever talks about that fact that the cities are deserted. The only cities where people go out at night, Philly, Miami, Chicago, Boston, New York, San Francisco before the exodus, LA. But everything else, people leave and it just empties out. And no one's there at night. And it's these big structures and there's parking lots. I've performed in these cities and you're like, where are the people going to come from? And they must have like an underground pipeline to the parking lot to the city from wherever they live. It's bizarre. It makes me uncomfortable. You see two people walking on the street and you're like, I like to see people walking around.
Yeah, it's like a monument to sort of like this brutalist architecture, this like colossal building and, you know, one person walking in front of it in the middle of the day. Yeah.
And it's also part of the reason why people are so, this started in the 1950s. Once they built malls, people were not part of a community. So you don't see each other, you don't feel connected, you know what I mean? And then suddenly you're separated physically and then it becomes psychological.
Do you feel like you're connected with your neighborhood in New York?
No, I mean, my building, it's so funny. I get in the elevator and a few people are like, hey, what's up? You know, under the masks. But most, a good percentage of people just look at you like the mask is an excuse where they don't even have to acknowledge you anymore. And it is interesting, you know what I mean? To see the percentage of people that don't want to say, they don't want to nod and say hello in the elevator. I know it's a little thing, but it bugs me. It makes me want to, you know, hit them with a pipe. But it's a good percentage of people that are using this as an excuse to be even more unfriendly.
I don't know, man. I think you like it here. People are aggressive in their hellos here. It's
Hello.
Go ahead. Here's another interesting question, and I'm sure it'll happen one day. Because who knows in politics? If offered, what cabinet post would you accept?
Oh, I mean, I'd like to be Secretary of State because that's the one you get to fly all over the world to the best, you know, you get treated to a banquet when you show up, the best rooms in the estate. That's like the best job in the world, Secretary of State. I mean, it drains you out because you're flying a lot. But is there a better job in the world than Secretary of State, United States, going to be a big ceremony? You go there, it's a big party every day. It's like when I was on MTV all over again.
This is maybe telling tales out of school. Best city to perform in and worst city to perform in?
I mean, the best city to perform in, it depends where you're from. I mean, for me, it's New York, of course, you know.
Right.
New York, Boston, Philly are my comfort cities. Those are my cities where I feel like we all speak the same language. You know, like I don't have to slow down. I don't have to do anything. You know what I mean? They're like basically, this little corridor, Amtrak, I like, you know, and D.C., everybody in comedy loves DC. Every comedian loves it. I don't know why, but we all love it. And
real question there. I think he was trying to like parse it in a nice way. What's the worst city? I think the question asker.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the worst to me was Hollywood, Florida. They had a gig there where it was just like everyone's coked up. And I realized halfway through my third show there, they were talking every show. And I go, here's the problem. I said, Florida, you skip, and I think I put it in the book, you skip that step of working for 30 years to get their retirement. You're the people that said, why should I bust my ass to get a house? I'll just go to Florida. I'll get a DJ, drug dealing, bartending job. I'll live by the water. I'll go to the beach. I'll party all night. And I'll skip the step of working hard for retirement. I'll go into retirement at age 24. And they all started cheering. So, I mean, I think I hit the nail on the head with that one.
And I guess we were talking earlier about sort of stereotype, self-pride, that sort of thing. Is there any other place in the country that shares Philly? Again, Philly is like New York. Everybody's just obsessed with talking about it. It's very narcissistic. Is there any other place in the country that shares our sense of self-loathing?
Self-loathing? I don't think they loathe themselves.
That's what this question is.
But I mean, you look at... There's always somebody at every show that comes up to me and goes, yeah, this city sucks. Wherever you go, they're like, I hate it here. But I would say the cities with the cockiest cities, the cities that really think they're the greatest, Austin, Texas, obviously.
My.
Austin, Texas, they're obsessed with themselves. You know, New York, of course, and Seattle in a very quiet way. They have a certain thing where they're like, they think they used to be great. So maybe they have the self-loathing of Philly in the sense that Seattle's like ashamed of how they are now. But they're like, we used to be the greatest place until 1998. Like they look down on the tech revolution because they were, you know, they had iPhones back in the 80s when none of us did. They probably had all that Steve Jobs stuff before we even knew it existed. So I would say self-loathing Seattle.
Okay. And just finally to wrap us up here at the end of the evening, just to kind of bring us all together, especially a New York and Philly thing. Could you take us out by reading pages 50 and 51 where you trash New Jersey, since it's the one keystone, the real keystone here is our mutual disdain for yes. New Jersey. Could you take us out on that, please?
Jersey, Philly and New York. New Jersey is like the kid in the middle that we keep pushing back and forth. Both of us right. bullying New Jersey. And he's just going, hey, guys, stop it. You push him, you push him. Yeah. I could say yes. So we'll start with the... Should I start with 50 with the other resentment New Yorkers have against New Jersey?
Sure.
The other resentment New Yorkers have against New Jersey is that we have to share so many things with them. The Statue of Liberty is New York land and Jersey water. Holland Tunnel is half New York, half New Jersey. MetLife Stadium is the New York Jets and the New York Giants. We share a stadium. And the ironic thing is the Jets fans act more New Jersey than the Giants fans, even though they're Jersey's teams, even though they're called New York. It's hard to explain. New York is connected to New Jersey in this sick way, only in the north. South Jersey is connected to Philly. They even have that dumb accent and they like the Eagles and they just enjoy Philly. North Jersey has more of a New York accent, only they pronounce the R more than New York. Jersey was the first to move west, real estate-wise. That was in the Wild West in 1650. The Lenape tribe divided it by turtle, wolf, and turkey. Today it would be divided by rest stop areas. Peter Minuit called the state New Sweden, and people would leave New Amsterdam and say, I'm moving out west to New Sweden, and people would ask, what exit? It's where Washington famously crossed the Delaware, which was considered a dangerous move because of the British and the ice and the Jersey drivers. Jersey's residents have always come to New York and we make fun of their driving and their suburban way of looking at things because every city has a suburb that it can do that to, a scapegoat, the place where the people come in on the weekends and you feel superior. Everybody wants people that they feel superior to. That's how you bond, by having a common enemy. But for some reason, one day in the early 1980s, everybody started to attack New Jersey. Even people that never went near it started to make New Jersey jokes. I don't know why. New Jersey has the most toxic dumps in America. Maybe that's why it smells. Maybe forgetting New York's waste. They're the garbage man for New York. But they also had the first baseball and basketball, first light bulb, first phonograph, so they could listen to whatever version of Bruce back in 1880. And I have to say, Bruce Springsteen really saved that state because he gave Jersey an identity. They were the state that was always in a muscle car on a drive to oblivion, and he gave them self-esteem. And they should have self-esteem. They're one of the original colonies, one of the 13 colonies, but you never see them that way because there's nothing historical or colonial about them. It doesn't feel like part of that time period. New Jersey feels like they just appeared fully formed around 1978. They've never had manners. They have no courtly manners. They're not refined. Having refineries does not count as being refined. Their philosophy has always been, hold on to what you've got. It doesn't make a difference if they make it or not. They've got each other, and that's a lot for love. They'll give it a shot.
And with that, we love you, New Jersey. But we'll call it a night here. Thank you so much for joining us at the Free Library. The book is called Overstated, A Coast-to-Coast Roast of the 50 States. This was really fun. Thanks for doing this. It's an essentially weird way of talking to people, but it was great. I loved it. So, and I think people did at home.
Thanks, guys.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.